Debbie, who we've already met, are Brian, Viswa, and Damien. Please tell us about your organization and how its work is relevant to our topic of implementation strategies for government clouds.
Sure. So I'm Brian Crowley from ASG Software. We're a pure software company that's been around for about 30 years. We've been involved in cloud-based development for over 10 years, primarily started overseas, but moved here into the commercial and federal government space. And we make a integrated platform for workspace delivery, so application delivery to the end user, a self-service catalog for user self-service, as well as workflows for enablement and approvals of those workflows, as well as viewing chargeback and billback capabilities. And we integrate into that platform a back-end data center management service to integrate with OpenStack for the spin up and spin down of virtual resources. Again, pure software play from a heterogeneous environment standpoint.
Thanks.
Sorry, Damien.
I wasn't sure what the order was here. So my name's Damien Whittem, and I'm with General Dynamics IT. If you're not familiar with General Dynamics, we do submarines, tanks. But we also do, the largest division of General Dynamics is the IT group, about $11 billion component within GDIT. I represent the Cloud Solutions Group. We have, we're one of the leaders in cloud development. We do data center migrations, things along those lines, develop strategies, do migrations, as I mentioned before. We also have a pretty robust practice. We've been developing around cloud brokerage. So we're in the process of bringing a number of different clouds together and offering to our customers. What we find is that in a lot of instances, there's, depending upon the application, depending upon the customer requirements, you have to find the right cloud. And sometimes it's our managed cloud, which is in the process of going through FedRAMP, and sometimes it's not. It could be Amazon's, it could be other providers as well. So that's kind of who we are and what we do. Thank you.
Thanks, Damien. Viswa?
I'm Viswa Kumar, and first of all, I want to thank CCA and DCIA for giving me the opportunity to be part of this wonderful expert, part of the team. Honored to be there. And you're experts in storage application and workflow process. I'm not an expert on many of those fields, but in the last better part of the last 2 years, I've spent on FedRAMP requirements and ATO process for the cloud service providers. And also an elaborate process to become a 3PA. It's not an easy process. And of course, wherever possible, I'm going to relate my response to the FedRAMP requirements. Don't worry, Ross, I'm not going to talk about a lot of this. It's just reference notes. I work for Kinetic North America. It's a subsidiary of a British company. You can see the name spelling there. No offense here, probably a British way of spelling, I guess. We offer services and solutions to the DRE and Homeland Security in various sectors, basically space engineering, IT infrastructure that includes cloud transition, and software solutions, system integration and engineering, where we have developed our own private cloud for different government agencies. And of course, my part basically is the FedRAMP 3PAM. I heard the term FedRAMP and ATO repeatedly today. Everybody is familiar with that. Probably some of you are familiar with the term 3PAO too. 3PAO basically is a third-party assessment organization accredited by FedRAMP to do the assessment. It's mandatory for the cloud services to get assessed by 3PAO, get the ATO. So that's basically what my role is. Thank you.
Thanks. And Viswa, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
First question, and we'll start right here with Debbie. Following on from the first keynote regarding data storage, what are the alternative implementation strategies for storing government data? And can a single agency or bureau have more than one strategy for cloud-based storage of its sensitive info? And which approaches are best for which types of data?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yes, I think there should be multiple strategies for sure. It all depends on the kind of data you have. We work really hard, at least at our lab, to take a look at the data and then classify it properly from the start. So it's either low or moderate or potentially high level data. And so we take that seriously. We always want to make sure that our data storage solutions match that. So in our case, we store some data on the cloud. We store some data internal on the NREL servers behind NREL firewalls. But both solutions are useful and needed, and I think it's all about accessibility, data accessibility, and based on the classification of that data.
Thanks. Grant?
I'm going to try not to say me too. there's multiple types of storage for multiple types of data. I have yet to come across any organization that only has one type of data, whether it's, you know, depending on whatever metric you use, security, how vital it is, how much it's accessed, the rate of actual data transfer to access it. So I can't imagine there would be a scenario where any one organization wouldn't have multiple storage types and strategies.
Fair enough. Brian?
Sure. So instead of saying me too, I'm gonna do a little something different. I'll say your storage strategy has to include a way to get it out of what your initial implementation is. So as you're planning your strategy, don't just plan going into the cloud. It's going into a cloud vendor, and you need to plan for when you need to migrate it out of that cloud vendor. That needs to be part of your strategy, whether you're, you know, on-prem, off-prem, whatever it happens to be. It's who's going to be your next vendor 5-10 years down the road. How are you going to get it out of the vendor that you're picking today? Has to be a part of your strategy.
Thanks, Brian. Damien?
Okay, so me too?
Hey, at least no. You're not Vishwa. He's got to go last year.
Yeah, no, I don't know what you're going to say. No, in all seriousness, so policy is going to set your guidelines, right? So, and then you're going to have to figure out what your business needs are. That'll set your priorities. The thing that we deal with, and we run the single largest VDI implementation in our private cloud in the government today, probably in the world. And part of the challenge is it covers different classification levels. So we have to go from high side to secret to unclassified. So we have to figure out a way that we can be able to view that data and also, you know, deal with the storage needs. So very often we have to feed everything up to the high side and then monitor at that level. So that's kind of one of the key things. We work very closely with companies like NetApp. They help us out. They give us an opportunity to look at things so we know what to expect, so we can see what's coming down the pike. And it helps us develop the products and services that we provide to our customers. So, you know, in a nutshell, it's knowing how to deal with the data, what the expectations are, and then how to map a path forward to deal with innovations as they come down the
Thanks, Amy.
Become available.
So coming at this a little differently, being a data center provider, we have 9 of the Fortune 20 in our data centers today, and we see each one of those organizations having multiple places that they're storing their data, multiple locations. Typically, they'll come to us when they've run out of space, they've run out of power, they're putting up their own private cloud, and they want it to be redundant, et cetera. A lot of our customers start small, and then once they realize that it's still their data, they still touch it, it's private, it's secure, they typically tend to grow substantially over time. But very rarely is all of their data in any of our data centers, and they have multiple paths and multiple places that they keep it. So.
Yeah, implementation strategy for all the data, of course, cloud becomes the key source of backup data. We're not going to start doing the backup on the tapes and taking to your basement anymore. Because the cloud backup actually meant not only for temporary storage, but all of a sudden tomorrow you need excess data, you go to the cloud and get the data. As far as the FedRAMP is concerned, there are, if you are familiar with the 853 NIST regulation, the new Rule 4, there are 3 requirements for alternative storage. I mean, one is it should have the same security standards as your primary storage. The second one is it should be geographically separated. We need to make sure of that. And the third one, of course, is the accessibility, wherever it's stored. It should be available when it is required. And of course, again, the second part of the question is what type of data it is, classification. If it's MITRE data, you have different requirements for storage, different requirements for security. If it is DoD, they have different requirements there. So,
thanks, and we'll start with Grant for the next question. We're going to ask the same question about software applications. So what are the new implementation strategies for government agencies and the military in selecting cloud-based software apps, and which cloud programs are best for which functions of the government?
Well, if you look at the commercial space, the software applications that are delivered as SaaS today tend to be things that are fairly consistent across different types of businesses. You know, Salesforce.com is the perennial example of cloud software application. And that's simply because sales is sales. It's kind of the same regardless of what type of business you're in. I think in the public sector and federal space, the same will be true to an extent, such that things, ADP, I heard someone the other day say that ADP is now a cloud payroll company. It's okay. You know, traditionally, that's data that most people would think of as pretty sensitive, Social Security numbers and everything else. But to the point, I think in the public sector, federal space, there are going to be certain things that are fairly consistent across, different departmental and the military and so forth. But I think what's going to actually stop that to a certain extent, at least for the foreseeable future, is the security requirements, and not security so much from a technical perspective, but having classified data in a cloud environment, for example, that's a very different conversation, I think.
Brian?
Sure. So I'll take a similar vein and say that IT software applications in the commercial sector are gaining ground because companies are willing to compromise. In the past, in commercial business, IT was a competitive advantage. Somebody who could spend more on IT could develop a better process, automate it. Now, Salesforce.com, you're right, sales is 90% right there because people can get to the application quicker, right? And the problem on the government side of things is that people aren't willing to compromise. How many of you have worked with the government where they said, well, yes, I have HR data, I have payroll data, but I do something just a little bit different and I have to have it done my way? It's gonna take some leadership at the top to get people to compromise and look at the commonalities of what's going on in the different agencies versus saying, well, nope, I do things different, so I have to have my own implementation and forget what they're doing. So that, from a strategy standpoint, is where I come from. And then which is best? We're gonna say, you're gonna keep hearing up, they're all gonna work because every agency is gonna have a need or a budget that is gonna require differences until those changes at the top are made and flow down into the culture.
Thanks, Brian. Damien?
Okay, so I'm going to take a different vein on this. I think that a lot of the applications that are out there today are not cloud ready, and I think that as software is developed that makes these applications cloud ready, you'll find that there will be more software platforms that will be used more along the lines of like a Salesforce in the government. But I don't think we've scratched the surface yet. I think we've started, but I don't think we're there yet. And I think it'll be a couple years more down the road. So I'm kind of giving you a vision, but I think that the vision is that once we start developing software programs to be cloud enabled, I think you'll see the performance levels will be there and you'll see some things that'll start to develop. That'll be to everybody's benefit.
Yeah, I would echo what Brian said. I think ultimately it's just a matter of time. Government's a slower adopter and cloud technology is still a bit new and foreign to them. But you're right, I think ultimately the ability to save money, work more efficiently, they're going to have to compromise in some places. The FedRAMP and all of those regulations that we all jump through in order to settle the government, they're there for a reason, right? So to make sure we're safe and secure. So I think we'll get there. I just think it's a matter of time.
Thanks, Stuart.
Yeah, as Stuart and Brian, both of you talked about Salesforce.com, and of course, Damien immediately said Salesforce.com is a good example, but there are a lot of applications out there that are not ready yet, like Salesforce.com. So what are the key factors? CIA, confidentiality, integrity, and really the availability of those applications when you really need them. That's what makes it cloud ready. And if you look at the FedRAMP requirement, there's again contingency planning requirement for all this. It's all the CIA is being requirement for it to make it cloud ready.
Thanks, Vishal. Debbie?
Yeah, so in my experience, I think in the applications we're developing, it's all about being open data. If it's open data and meant to be accessible and reused by the public, that's, to me, something that for sure should be on the cloud. It also enables, the cloud also enables us to be agile, which traditionally we're not able to do that in-house as easy. So those are two, or three, I guess, reasons why we go out on the cloud. Moderate data, I think right now, it's more difficult. Like I said, we're trying to come up with a solution for moderate data on the cloud. So maybe that's one that's kind of more in the gray area, you know, like we need to figure out the right solution there. But when it's about open data and making that accessible, I think the cloud is a great solution. And I'd like to utilize the cloud for what it is good at and what maybe federal agencies are not as good at, you know, so.
Thanks, Debbie. All right, Brian, we'll start with you for this. What did you hear in the keynote from Mr. Kirkwood regarding workflow processes that suggest the best implementation strategy for that aspect of migrating to the cloud? And what strategies are best for the various operational functions or tasks of government agencies, and which workflow processes will be most improved by moving them to the cloud?
Sure, so I heard a lot most recently about taking the end users into account when you're developing your workflows and your processes, right? Most everybody that was up here and talked about technology, they talked about maybe a CIO, but nobody until later today talked about the mission user, the end users, right? It's the end users that drive adoption. We did have a few people that talked about people and processes, but let's face it, it's the mission requirements, the end users. We all serve the end users. It's the end users that get the mission done and the IT that enable the mission, right? You have to keep the end users in mind and you have to keep them happy while you're moving over to the cloud, whether you're moving to infrastructure as a service, software as a service, whatever it happens to be. It's the end users and the impacts to their workflow that will determine the success or failure of your strategy.
Thanks, Brian. Damien?
Yeah, so what I heard today is that and I wrote it down, the cloud must be easy to consume to ensure adoption, which is what you just said. I completely agree with that. In fact, I was on a panel this morning, and that is exactly what I said. I said the problem, they said, what's the big, one of the biggest challenges of the cloud? And I said, it's adoption. And it's understanding what the end users are going to want and having that vision to deliver it to them. And I think that's it. So making it easy for the end users to adopt is huge. I think you were spot on with that comment.
Stuart?
I heard an interesting comment earlier that when defining the strategy, sometimes your definition and the time it takes to define the strategy, once that's figured out, there's something new, because that's how fast the cloud and technology is changing. I think once a decision is made to go to the cloud, then you move forward with the migration, affecting the end users. When people move from a legacy data center into one of our data centers, they say, well, how do I do that, right? They've never done it before. They don't have the experience, the application migration, how are end users affected? Is there going to be downtime? All of those things need to be really closely managed and taken into account. So I would say that's an impact, because you don't want a bunch of angry end users when you can't get to your applications.
Vishal?
That's true, yeah. Good presentation on the workflow, Grant, and very good graphic, really impressive graphic, explain what you want to say. As far as you touched base on the workflow process for purchase or configuration management or accounting, I mean, you brought up the accounting, yet they're all mandatory requirements. At the same time, migrating cloud, really you also touched base on the automating the workflow. That is critical for especially configuration management in the cloud, or probably many of you are aware of that incident response process. And unless you automate it, I mean, you're not going to have a smooth process in the cloud.
And Debbie?
Yeah, I really liked your dashboards. When I saw those, I was like, oh, we totally need those. So I really like the dashboards, because I think that would really really excite the IS department or the OCIO department to see that kind of monitoring and automation capability that you presented out there. So that was my favorite part, and I think that it would also bring IS along with us all to embrace change a little bit, to see dashboards like that they'd have those tools at their fingertips to help them kind of embrace the change that is needed, you know, to move from being a builder of these systems to more of a the monitor or the system admin role.
I have a comment here. I mean, I'm not an expert in workflow, but most of these software applications kind of have a built-in workflow, don't they, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, we have dashboards and monitoring now for some of our systems, but I think that they can be improved.
Well, I guess we'll come full circle with the man who taught us about workflow himself. What did you find most interesting about yourself?
Easy to use, automate workflow.
Automate workflow, yeah, that's the key, yeah, automate the workflow.
We'll start with Damien for the next question. When a bureau, office, or post is preparing a new cloud implementation strategy, which of the three aspects we've discussed so far should take the highest priority? How and where to store their data, what software programs to access from the cloud, or what operations to migrate to the cloud?
Well, I believe in taking a business approach, and I think operations will drive those decisions, both what software you're going to use and what storage you're going to use. Pretty simple, pretty clear cut.
How and where to store their data.
I guess that's a pretty easy question for the data center.
I would say that the application probably comes first because data storage is available off the shelf. It's a commodity. Yeah. So whereas application is a much more complex requirement on most of the clouds. And as I thought earlier, some of the workflow can be built in along with the application.
Yeah, I'd say how and where to store the data also, because I think that we've proved that we can build almost any application on the cloud. We've done that well. I think our restriction, where we sit at least, is are we able to put that data on the cloud? Is it something we can put out there or not? And I think to us, that's where our hands get tied a little bit. So how and where?
Great.
I think actually, I don't know that there's a right answer. What I do think is that as you look at implementing a cloud strategy, you have to think very carefully, you know, what am I actually trying to achieve? What benefits am I trying to realize? Because cloud at the end of the day isn't really, it's not about the technology, right? It's not about the data, where we put it, how we store it, all these other things. It's really about achieving something better, which is, you know, for me, it's focus and agility, and that's what we most commonly hear. But everybody has an objective, and I think if you let that objective drive what you do on a technology standpoint, you're going to be a lot better served than having kind of a, you know, religious belief about I have to do it this way and it has to sit here because, you know, vendor X told me so, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Ryan?
Well, choice of three, and there have been five people that gone, so I'm just gonna, I'm with these two.
Fair enough. Well, then we'll start with Stuart for the next question. What other aspects of migrating to the cloud that we haven't talked about yet, in addition to data, apps, and workflow considerations, need to be part of the implementation strategy, and how would you prioritize those aspects versus what we have already talked about?
I would say overall, from everything I've seen, it would be resources, human resources. I think the migration to the cloud should be a very closely project managed event by somebody who's done it before and has an expertise in it. I also think that there's a general conception that once things get into the cloud, they're just there and they work, and that's not really a reality. No matter what the application is, there needs to be that support internally to support it. And a lot of times that resource isn't defined at first, or it's not a full, maybe that's, you know, somebody's doing it, whatever it is, that the resources that need to support your applications or your hardware or whatever it may be in a cloud-based environment usually need to be refined post-implementation.
Vishwa?
Yeah, I mean, if you really look at implementation strategy, you can create a long list, not just out of three, but immediately thought about customer service from CSP. You need to look at that before you migrate to cloud. And the transparency of operations. What happens if the cloud service provider makes a change tomorrow? Are you aware of that? You should be part of the change. And the CSP basically should be an extension of your organization. They are not a separate organization. They should be part of your organization. That's very critical. And of course, the security requirements as defined by FedRAMP is a critical strategy to when you go to migrate to the cloud.
Right. Debbie?
Yeah, I was going to say coming up with a long-term strategy for both internal and external hosting of applications is important. And I say long-term strategy, but I also believe that it should be updated in very short time bursts, because the cloud is changing so often. It's like you can come up with a strategy today that may not work in 6 months from now. So, and then also, I agree with resources and costs, both internally and externally. We have to evaluate both sides of that coin, because I think that I agree that sometimes they'll say, oh, that's out there on the cloud. It's just magic that it's there and it's living and it doesn't necessarily need any additional resources to keep that going, which is definitely not true. And then on the internal side, I'd like to make that case to our management that if we keep things in-house, then there's a mortgage to that too. We have to make sure that we upgrade our systems and servers internal, and that comes with a cost as well.
You said three things, right?
Yes.
All right. So
you have to come up with a fourth.
I have to come up with a fourth. I've got plenty. the first thing I would say is, before you even start on migration, have really clearly defined objectives. Because it's so easy, you know, going back to my Photoshop thing, it's so easy to go a lot of different ways and get caught up in the technology. If you haven't clearly set what you really want to achieve, you're going to get lost. The second thing to, Vishwa, you had a really good point about how aligned is the organization, assuming you outsource it to a service provider, which I think most people are now. You really have to find somebody that understands the challenges that you have internally and is going to interact with you as a part of your team. That's, mm-hmm. That's something that's been really important to our clients, and you know, quite frankly, that's not something you can get with an Amazon, right? So the third, we typically see people kind of get lost in the TCO conversation. They look at, all right, server costs X dollars, I'm gonna, you know, capitalize it over 5 years. How much does it cost to stick that in a data center, space and power and blah, 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 and then they come up with some number. And let's say they might even remember there's a cost of people that go along with it. They usually don't at first, but let's say they do and they're great. Okay, the thing that you can never wrap into that is the organizational benefits that you have by freeing those people up to do the important stuff. And you know, to the first point about the people, it really comes back to the people. If you can say, all right, my service provider is going to handle the migration, my people can go back to working on the applications that they're experts at, you're going to have a much higher achievement of what you're trying to do, as opposed to kind of getting lost in the technology and nuances of moving complex applications.
Right.
Okay, so I'll just add 2 points to that. Right along with the defined scope, you need a strong leader, somebody who's got a firm grip on the tiller, right? Not an iron grip, because you don't want to keep going and drive that ship right under when you hit that first squall, but somebody who's got a firm grip to work through the problems and to stay the course, but not be afraid to turn if, as Debbie talked about, things change. If technology's changed in 6 months, you have to be able to adapt to that a little bit. And so on that side, not only do you need the strong leadership, the defined scope, but you need to pick service providers, vendors, what have you, that are partners. Because if things are going to change every 6 months in that cloud environment, you need somebody who's going to treat you like a partner, tell you what changes they're thinking about making, and live up to their commitments. Sorry, I know we heard that earlier in the morning. I'm sure he didn't mean it the way he came across in terms of going away from roadmaps. But you need a vendor that's going to stick to their roadmaps, but also let you know if they're going to deviate from that a little bit. So strong leadership and partners in whoever your vendors are. Because we all know in that, you know, scale of cloud environment, it'd be just like calling your bank. You're just going to get a phone tree when it comes time to call up. You know, driving costs out of their business at scale, and you really need somebody who's going to be a partner for you to be able to take advantage of what they're offering.
Sure, and we'll wrap this one up with Damien.
Okay, so I believe it's a garbage in, garbage out kind of thing, right? And so the first thing is I'm going to talk a little bit more about migration into the cloud, because that's the way I interpreted this question. And I think that, first of all, you need to do is, you need to do two things. One is you need to interview your SMEs for any given project. You really need to know what exactly is going on in their heads. And then you need to validate that against the CMDBs and the DSIM tools and all the data you've collected, and then look at that information, understand that about 75% of it's garbage, right? Just throw it out. So then once you do that, you need to correlate, you know, your different factors, and then put together your workflows, right? And how you're going to move stuff, and then follow your runbook. And then the last thing I would say is have an executive dashboard and keep the executives at bay, right? Keep them pushed off the side. Say, here's all you need to know. The project's on, you know, it's moving according to plan, because you don't want to get too far into the weeds, because you can get wrapped around the axle. So those are the kinds of things I would say. And the last thing is, for the end users, set the expectations that, again, if it's a legacy environment and it was physical and you're moving to a virtualized platform, it may not function the same way, and you need to make sure the end users understand those expectations. So.
Thanks, Damon. We'll start with Vishwa for the next question. We're going to talk now about your guys' own personal experiences with implementation strategies for public sector entities at either federal, state, or local. What has been the most effective or exemplary implementation that you've seen so far? So basically, who's done it best that you've seen?
Oh, I don't know why you selected me first. I don't have any personal experience here, but I discussed this in detail with some of my colleagues. So we have been working on this for ages. And the first thing they said to me was, yeah, make sure the CSP or the contractors or the 3PAO is like, check the background, they have the experience to suit your requirements. And the next one is repeatable solutions. And the third one is what you brought, except, I mean, adaptable to changes. It's not something that you have it today and tomorrow it probably should be adapted to technology changes and resource changes and all the same. And as far as I'm concerned, I will look for what FedRAMP conformance. And of course, as far as the G Cloud is concerned, it's not an option anymore. So whether it's a strategy or not, unless you have it, you don't get the business anyway. So.
Fair enough. Debbie?
Well, this one's hard for me since we're the implementers, actually, so I think we do a good job. But on a side, I mean, I feel like there are certain projects that we've implemented probably better than others, and I think we're learning over time. Things change very rapidly, as we've already talked. So, you know, just be trying to stay up to date on the new technologies and what we need to do, and not be afraid to change, I think, is important. So we've definitely, we went down a path for a while using certain tools, and then we've changed tools over time, and we're still looking at changing tools even now. So. And I think the thing that does make us successful, and I talked about it a little bit, is actually working in true DevOps fashion. So having our developers work very, very closely with our cloud engineers has been really successful for us.
Let me rephrase the question real quick. These don't have to be direct personal experiences right. You guys had. As long as it's some public entity that you've seen work well, that's fine. And Grant, we'll go to you.
I mean, I have to say that we implement it best, too. I mean, that's what we do. Although I will say this, we've had clients in the federal space on both ends of the spectrum. You know, the story about the one with, they had the paper forms to go spin up VMs in the cloud, I mean, that was a true story. That didn't go so well. But I will say that, you know, the conversation has changed. That was a couple of years ago. Now, buyers in the federal space are coming to us and saying, we want our own private Amazon. We want it to be easy. They know what they're trying to achieve. I don't know, I'd call out a specific example, but categorically, the implementation, the quality of the implementation is improving.
Yeah. Ryan?
For me, I'd have to say what I see in data.gov, just in general, because they are leading the way. They're breaking up some of those misconceptions about how data can be made available and for use. I know in other discussions that I've had with customers, they always worry about making data available on non-open networks to programs and what that's going to do to their usage and performance profiles, i.e. they've had a program that they spec'd out for their use, but they built it in a distributed fashion, and now they want to open that data on their internal network, but they're afraid of the performance characteristics. I think what data.gov has shown us is that you can open data up to the general public, and you can address those performance characteristics. It is possible, and you're not going to necessarily swamp your systems. Or maybe if you do, then it's time to say how much of a raging success you are, and you know, get some additional infrastructure. I think there's nothing but goodness going on there.
Damien?
So you remember my earlier answer just now? Same thing. No, seriously, the key to successful migrations for us is, does the agency understand exactly what they're trying to accomplish? That's so important because, it's setting expectations, and can you meet those expectations? And then, are the operational units, have they bought into the strategy? Usually it's the CIO that's driving that strategy, and the operational units, because of budget, may not be in complete agreement. So the more successful or the most successful projects I've seen have been where the group has taken a portfolio approach as opposed to a program approach. In other words, they're doing O&M and management acquisition at a portfolio level, which is really what the cloud's doing for them, right? So when you see the groups that are thinking in those terms, they're more successful.
Stuart?
Take a little bit of a different spin on this. We recently, in the past year, had a Japanese company that makes money on the internet continuously, that shall remain nameless, come to us. And they asked us to build them a 40,000 square foot data center in the Phoenix area, but they didn't want it to be cooled with our typical air conditioners or our typical water cooling systems. They instead wanted their racks submerged in oil. So our CTO, who came from Microsoft and built data centers all through the 80s and 90s and is like the god of data centers, got with their CTO, who was really smart too, and we built them a 40,000 square foot data center where we have their racks cooled in oil. And I'll send you guys the link. It's awesome.
I've actually seen those things.
And it's really cool. Engineering feat. And the example is that I'm trying to put forth here is we're willing to work with our customers to provide solutions even if they're a little bit off the beaten path. And that customer is up and running. It's a one-end environment. They're up and running. They're doing it more cost efficiently, and no one else in the world is doing it. And they've been in production now for over 6 months.
It's incredible.
Can I jump in for a second?
Sure.
And this is for you. In terms of energy efficiency, I think these are like 30,000 watts per square foot intensities.
It's like 30 kW per
rack. It's off the chart.
Wow.
It's really, really interesting stuff.
There's no one else in the world. It's pretty cool.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's great.
Vishwa,
you haven't shared the
hype. Well, that's a lot of it. Development in Houston.
I'll end the major.
Anyway, the key factor, I think, is the transparency between the CSP and the agency and close relationship between the two. One good example I heard from one of my colleagues is some time back they were not able to retrieve data from where it was stored because of the ownership of the encryption fee. There was the issue of the ownership of the encryption fee. And there was CSP and the agency, they were not talking to each other, and really ended in loss of data, basically. So that's a good example of lessons learned.
Good, I'm happy. Grant, you had a good example you wanted to share?
Healthcare.gov.
You just ruined my next question.
I know.
Well, the next question was going to be now at the opposite end of the spectrum, the most problematic implementation strategy. Well, that was a great example right there.
Sorry.
We'll start with Brian for this one. Without embarrassing the parties involved, what approach has been the least successful, and most importantly, what lessons did you learn from said example?
So I'm not going to take that one. No, being first. I think for me, it was a cloud implementation of IT for IT's sake without looking at the business use case. It's one thing to, we heard it earlier, forklift an application up to the cloud to try and get space, power, and cooling, right? So then you're on your compute resources, you get space, power, and cooling savings. Great, you're saving money. I mean, maybe that's the end of your cloud strategy. But in one case, we saw end users weren't consulted about where the applications were going to be placed, and they couldn't use the resulting application because of the network latencies. So IT doing things without consulting the end users, boy, so that's a theme with me. I don't know if you noticed that. Without consulting the end users, without consulting the mission users, the business users, not a good scene, not a good thing.
Pretty important to keep your customers satisfied.
Yeah, so I would think that in the same vein, anytime you try to do a P to V migration, you're playing with fire. And we've seen more things go south. Maybe it's been, we've had an exit strategy, so fortunately we've been able to save it. But also there are instances where we put it in the virtual environment and the performance has just really lagged. And it's really upset the end users who, at the end of the day, it's about. So virtualize, then move. Don't try to go from P to V. Too many things can go wrong.
Yeah, so especially in big organizations, a lot of times they don't know what they have. That's been a recurring theme today. You know, what interacts with what? Where is it? How does it work? Who does it affect? We've put in place, a gatekeeper per se. When we sign up a new customer and they're moving into our data center, we make them sit down with our solutions engineering team and produce a list of the actual equipment that's moving in. A lot of times they'll sign up and say, I need 1,000 square feet. Once our solution engineer gets done with them, which is unfortunate sometimes, it's like 600 square feet. So it's really, you know, they don't know where it is, where to put it, or sometimes it's more than that. So I think really just understanding what they have and then talking about the application side, you know, how to migrate it and who it affects, we've seen be very problematic for the end user, especially if they don't have the expertise or don't hire the expertise to do it right.
Yeah, I mean, big or small organization, everybody will agree that nobody wants to change anything. Hey, works today, why want to change it? But again, senior management looks at the ROI, but Brian brought up a very key point here. ROI, part of the ROI should be, what do you get for the end users? Are they going to benefit with this change? You know, then it might be worth it. So that's basically what it is.
Debbie?
I was just going to say, trying to change the mentality of just business as usual as well. So it's like sticking with the old, you know, we have these processes in place, this is the products we have, this is what we need to stick with, and not being willing to embrace new technologies and change has been our hardest struggle.
Great.
I got to come up with another one.
Just one more, I promise, no more after this.
We had a client come to us a number of years ago, and they large global financial services company, and they said, you know, we built a cloud infrastructure internally, nobody used it, they spent a ton of money doing it too, somebody in accounting figured out that they were spending like $1 million a month with Amazon, but it wasn't a line item on the budget, it was 1,000 IT people putting it on their expense reports each month. And they'd spent a ton on this cloud infrastructure. And so they brought us in. They said, well, our first one didn't work. Build us another. And so, well, that's kind of weird. This probably isn't going to end well. So we took a look around and tried to figure out, well, why didn't it work the first time? And it turned out, you know, they had a long-standing process of workflow to spin up resources in their data centers. They had like 15... you know, million square foot data centers that they own themselves. Really big footprint. And they were really proud because they had gone from 6 months down to 6 weeks. So 6 months, it would go from, you know, the guy needs a server in a data center and go to his boss and go to requisitioning and finance for approval and his boss and, you know, get lost in this bureaucratic tangle. So what they did was they virtualized or optimized that workflow with literally a bunch of paper that went around and emails and everything to all those same people. And so they saw it as a win when they went from 6 months to 6 weeks to provision virtualized resources in their new private cloud. And guess what? Nobody used it. So it didn't end well.
It's a great case. All right, our last question of the day, and we'll start with Damien for this one. Are there strategies from non-government implementations of cloud-based solutions that could be applied in the public sector? What have you seen outside the government in migrating business functions or operations to the cloud? And which one would work well for an agency, bureau, or military unit? And why would this approach be beneficial for that branch?
Well, I think I keep going back to the same theme, but software development in business is calculated in part of the total cost of ownership. The government doesn't really do that. If the government took that approach, they may be more amenable to making the investment in software development. I think it's critical. So that's what I think is the big driver there is they need to think a little bit more on the business side and look at the total cost of ownership. How does software development impact that? I think that's key.
Sure.
Well, on the commercial side, it doesn't make sense anymore to build your own data center. the finances are just straightforward. It's crazy to build your own data center, whether you're a Fortune 10 customer or anything outside of that. With the government, the same theory applies. Looking to cut costs, whether it's operational costs, whether switching from a CapEx to an OpEx model, security, redundancy, you name it, it does make sense to look at co-location providers for your infrastructure. And that trend, which we showed today, is only growing. It's just a matter of the speed to adoption and the comfort level. So what we're seeing more and more is the decommissioning of legacy data centers. A lot of the data centers have plenty of space. A lot of them can't be heated. A lot of them can't be cooled efficiently. A lot of them can't be replicated. A lot of them aren't redundant. There's a whole multitude of reasons, but a lot of data centers were built in the 80s and 90s, and they're now going away. And those customers are very quickly moving into co-location facilities such as CyrusOne and there are many others. I think it's just a matter of time before the government does the same.
Relating it to the security requirement for both commercial and government, commercial, most of them are FISMA compliant, and most of them follow the 853. And the only thing FedRAMP has added, a few more controls to make it cloud specific, and government, FedRAMP has basically adapted the same FISMA and 853 and added a few more to it to make it more secure. So.
Yeah, I guess you know, we work so much with within the government that it's hard for me to see beyond that sometimes. But I guess I just would like to learn more about their agility, because they are doing this, and they are shutting down data centers left and right so that they can be on the cloud. They don't have the restrictions that the government agencies do, but just trying to learn from any of their experiences and how we can utilize that in the government is what I'm looking for.
Great.
I was the oldest of two siblings.
Me too.
My younger sister, watching her grow up, she did a lot of things that I couldn't do or get in trouble for. It strikes me that, you know, I kind of blazed the way for her to have a really easy, and not to say that it's easy at all, but what I've seen is the conversation in the government space around cloud has evolved so quickly in such a short amount of time, much faster, I think, actually, than in the commercial space, which has really been interesting. The conversations that federal agencies are coming to us with are actually really progressive, whereas the first conversations that were happening in the commercial space, they had no idea. So I think, you know, there are challenges that are unique in both, but I think to a certain extent, the trail's been blazed a little bit. And I think that's a good thing.
Brian?
So to wrap up on this question, I think the biggest thing that the government can take away from the commercial space is more effective communication on these projects. And Debbie alluded to it a little bit with your slide on having dev and ops sitting near each other. But take that all the way up the chain. I think leadership needs to communicate more effectively and more often about why the projects that are going on are important to the strategy and the mission of the organization, and they need to keep doing it consistently and making it part of the organization. I think Grant showed how projects flowed from the CIO to a director to a group to this, to that, and it was all one way, and it was one time, right? Somebody starts, the next person goes, and 6 months later you have a project. You need to communicate all through that. It gets people excited. It gets people happy. They understand what the impact they have on the mission is. That's what commercial companies do every day. You hear about, you know, Silicon Valley beer blast. You hear about, you know, communications, all these different things that commercial companies do that, yes, some government entities do it, but could do better and could do more of. You can always do more communication. You can always do it better. Gets people excited and understanding what their day-to-day activities are contributing to the mission. So, communication for me.
Implementing sure. Cloud is not just checking a box, right?
That's right.
It's actually there to do something cool.
That's right.
That's actually all the questions I have for them. Does anyone in the audience have any questions for any of our panelists?
Just one question about security. Very obviously, you know, what people worry about in terms of security is not what they should be worried about. I think the data centers, you know, provide more security, actually, than corporations. Date, you know, their security, you know, timely basis. So, you know, there's more security, you know, from external attacks. The problem is, you know, inside the organization, the employees themselves are a security threat. And, well, you may say that the same, you know, exists everywhere. So it's not just data centers or cloud computing. But the question is, how do you convince, you know, potential clients that the type of security, internal security you provide, is at least as good, if not better, than the type of security that organizations have, internal security?
Well, is that within a data center you're alluding to specifically?
Yeah.
So you know, I'll tackle this one, I guess. So what our customers, it's floor space. We build data halls. Each data hall is typically 60,000 square feet of space. So think of an empty airplane hangar. Each customer will come in and put their own cage around their equipment, okay? Customers that have PCI, HIPAA compliance, any sort of compliance concerns, they could put it. We put a top on their cage, and we take that cage all the way down to the studs, right? On their cage, they could have a fingerprint reader. They could have a man trap. They could have anything. Our people don't have access to your cage. That's your dedicated lot of land that sits in our facility. Now, there's seven layers of security around and within the facility that restrict who gets in and who gets out. But once you get into that white floor space, only people that you permit can actually get into your cage. So it's essentially like you own the land within the data center itself. We don't have access to it at all.
I think for us it's a little more of a gray line because, you know, we sit inside the data center, so we build one of those cages for our clients. So for us it's a little more of a gray line because we are actually interacting with the infrastructure at an application level. So it's not an easy answer to that, actually.
Yeah, and to Grant's point, if you were in our data center and you have a contract with Grant, and you say you want Grant to be allowed in, okay, we'll let him in. But if you don't specifically tell us that Grant gets access, he never would get in. Does that make sense? You control access to the facility.
Anyone else have any other comments?
Can I just say something? So security is kind of a shared responsibility, both between the customer and the data center provider. And so you have to keep all those things in consideration. We have challenges in that. We deal with all different levels of security within our customer profile. What makes it challenging is that, you know, we have to work very closely with the person that is the administrator, Active Directory for single sign-on, things like that, that we have to go through, we have to make sure. But we also have, because we run some secure operation centers, there are tools that we have that we can actually drill down and see some of the behavior, some of the things that are going on, right? Now, I won't go into too great a detail on that, but you can see that we have to be, and we are concerned about insider threats, both within our corporation and as well for our customers. So we're being vigilant. But again, it's a shared responsibility between us and the customer.
I am relatively new to government, and one thing that I've noticed from working in the private sector compared to working in the public sector is a very different time orientation. And I'm just curious, number one, if you think I'm correct in seeing that way, or if I'm happy. Number two, what are the ramifications of that? In other words, I assume it's primarily in the sales process, but there may also be operational ramifications as well. And number three, what do you do about it, if that's the case?
Nothing.
You exercise a lot of patience, and you learn.
I think you're right, but I, like I said, to go back to my earlier point, that length of time from, hey, we want to do something in cloud to actually doing something has shortened a lot. But in the federal space.
A whole generation of technology by the time it takes to make a decision to implement. And that's, I guess, one of the ramifications I'm asking about.
Okay. So if I can tackle this one, because this is a great subject, right? So the first thing is that you have to understand that we are constrained by laws in working with the federal government. We're also constrained by the budget, right? And so there's only certain things we can do relative to what the budget will allow, we can't allow an agency to become anti-deficient. We have to deal with anti-deficiency laws. However, in cloud computing, when it's dynamic allocation and things are, you know, can rapidly expand, and there's IOPS costs and all kinds of things, perhaps, I'm going to float this out, is maybe a little acquisition reform, maybe the way that we approach these things. Because right now it's really, really, it's difficult. So, but what I would say is that to kind of bridge that gap, it's a level of understanding, it's a level of having worked in the space for a while, you begin to understand how to live with some of these hardships that you have to under. And I feel for the government customers, because a lot of times they see things they'd love to have, but because of budget constraints, because of policy, security, et cetera, they can't readily have it. We do everything we can, but we have to maintain certain things. We can't be found in conflict of interest. We have to maintain, you know, adherence to the laws. As General Dynamics, we are very cautious about how we approach anything that would look seen anyway improper. I think there's a traffic report coming through. No, I'm serious, but that's critical for us, is to make sure that we understand the process, and we have. You know, we're very cautious about it, but you're right. There seems to be a dual reality here.
If you don't mind, I'll also jump in too, yeah. Because as a software vendor, and you know, this may sound a little interesting, FedRAMP is actually pretty exciting. And now, you know, you say, why is that? Well, because it's the first ATO building block that I've ever seen. Now, I've been in the government a little bit longer than yourself, but a lot less time than other folks here, and trying to find the ATO from another organization and see if that was going to be good enough, whether it was the same agency or a different one, always a pain to try and find the FedRAMP baseline that we as a software vendor who don't have hardware, we don't have facilities, we don't have other things, to be able to look at our 10 controls and put that in with 270 other controls that somebody else has already written on, that's an amazing benefit for us to be able to get a solution into the government. So I think things are changing, right? It's still going to take a little bit more time while more FedRAMP providers get their JAB authentication and get their agency ATOs, but I think you'll see over time the ability to get solutions out more quickly. We're on that precipice. Maybe a better way to think about it is we're at the top of the hill starting to go down, and hopefully we'll pick up speed from my perspective based on the what FedRAMP could provide us.
Yeah, it'll probably take another year. There are about, 18 or 19 ATOs right now, and that should increase. And,
okay.
It's a complex process, number one. Number two, the FedRAMP PMO, they are really restricted in the resources they have. So their review time period is longer.
But that's a year to address the entire federal government instead of 18 months on one agency, then another 18 for the next one, then another 18 for the next one.
You know, there's one other thing that you want to also consider is that the next generation of people coming forward into the government are extremely smart. The people that are there today are very smart, but they're digital natives, and they don't have the level of patience. Seriously, I'm a digital fugitive. They're digital natives, right? My point is they're not gonna put up with this. You're gonna see that there will be some very innovative approaches on how we solve this problem, bridge the gap. Because when resources can be, you know, allocated as quick as, you know, you spin up a VM in a matter of minutes, and you're telling somebody, oh no, you can't do it because you've got to get this signed or get this approval, it's not gonna fly. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna fly. It's not gonna be workable.
Yeah, in our environment, we've gone from, you know, 8 days to maybe several weeks to down to just minutes to spin up a server, and it's definitely been worthwhile. And we do have really cutting edge software developers on our team that honestly I will lose if we can't respond quickly to them. They are doing amazing work, and they could go do that work for any other agency or go make a lot more money somewhere else too. So we want to make sure that we keep them on the cutting edge and working really fast to do the great work that they're doing. And the cloud does allow for that.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to ask about skills. Debbie, if you used a term I found intriguing, that you had cloud engineers, and later, I think earlier in the day, we talked about a lot of vendor management around SLAs. I'm just wondering, comments, are we able to retrain the skills of the people we have, or are there
Yeah, in our case, we have brought in some new folks. It's not that we couldn't have trained other people, but they were just booked. They already had their own normal IT jobs. So we went out and we're looking for specific skill sets, and we had a big laundry list of different skills that we were looking for. But the new workforce is, you know, so well trained, and they are digital natives, that we, you know, we're gravitating towards those people that can help support our fast-moving, agile development that we're looking at doing. And I mean, I'd be up for, you know, helping to retrain some people, but I don't necessarily have control over our IT department. We're an outside organization outside of the IT organization. So we're building our own cloud capability there. Yeah.
So I think anybody could be retrained to learn the new technology, given their willingness to want to do that. So
I also feel like there's a lot of people in our IS department that are willing to do that. They want to do that. In fact, they want to embrace this. But if we don't have a organizational strategy that supports that, then it's hard to shift jobs in an organization.
We can always tell when we get into an environment. There's two camps of people. There's the ones that are afraid about their jobs, right? Oh, this cloud thing is going to take a lot of work away from me. And then there's the others, exactly what you're saying. They're hungry for it. They say,
yeah,
you know, they know this is going to make their lives fundamentally better. It's going to be easier to get things done, and they do want to learn. And it's always really clear to see, you know, there's people that are firmly in either camp usually.
Any other questions?
Oh yeah, we just kind of piggybacking the whole thing. What would you say are like percentages of the, I guess, engineers who have been retrofitted to kind of embrace the cloud versus those who aren't? So like a 50-50 breakdown, just in your experience as you onboard people onto the cloud?
I guess I'd say in our organization, we're taking an approach that the new applications, the new things are going to go on the cloud. We haven't really retrofitted anything that was already existing in-house be pushed out there. So any of our new applications is what we put out on the cloud.
Any other questions or comments for our speakers? Let's give them a round of applause. We are officially done for the day. We'll have our networking reception.